Welcome to The Pursuit of Purpose, a podcast made possible by SkyLife Success, a SkyPass Group company. Join Krish Dunham, an author and speaker whose messaging has been described as the junction where God's ability and man's availability meet hope's accessibility.
Good morning, everybody, wherever in the world you are. We hope you're listening and tracking along with this extended series we so-called put together called Losing the Culture War. And we wanted to paint for you six different motifs that go back in time and history as to where this began. And hopefully you're finding the evidence compelling enough to ask yourself, what can you do at a time such as this? If we are the last bastion between a structured freedom that comes with responsibility, etc. In our times past, in the four episodes we have already posted, we began with deviation, where we introduced you to some of the characters, the world that they predicted, Huxley, albeit a world of about 2500, and Orwell, a world of 1984, their moods that they presented, instability, identity, community, and war being peace, etc. We articulated Marshall McLuhan's The Medium is the Message and Neil Postman's book, combining all of that in Amusing Ourselves to Death, as the first motif, which was the deviation, when it began, what it accomplished. Second was the distortion, the equality replacing fairness, justice replacing mercy, and moral law, abdication, and morals that man received and revived as a result of a new law where he was judge, jury, and executioner. Now, the reason for the recap is the trainer in me, because each week we add new people who ask if I'm doing a podcast, and if they pick up in episode 5, I just want to give them some clarity so that A, they may go back and listen, but B, they'll also track right along. The third was the delusion, the vocabulary being manipulated, the grammar being redefined, identity being up for grabs, fluidity being something that is an expression of oneself, and then the all-important feelings versus facts debate, which we're all guilty of and in some way are also victim to. Last week, we talked about the declaration, the secularization, the loss of identity, anything goes, pluralization, the loss of shame, everything goes. Privatization, the loss of reason, I go, which means we retreated to suburbia, raised our fences and our children in relative isolation. And as a result of that, when it got time for them to enter back into the workforce and to the force of the world, they were confronted with an evil that they had not seen brewing because they were grown and raised in relative isolation. Now, wherever in the world you are, you probably have had some kind of a donut effect where the center became corrupt, it became riddled with crime, and as a result, suburbia became the appeal of those people who wanted to somehow still practice the morality of their youth and the old adage of honesty and integrity that came from the one-room schoolhouses that many cultures propagated that produced some of the great people who shaped those republics. America's donut effect is now reversed to some degree, where there's a revitalization program going on in downtowns around the world, around America. The loft conversion, the apartments being made from the old warehouses that have long been abandoned as manufacturing moved either away from those locales or overseas entirely. One of the things that we are now starting to see is a book I'm right now going through is also dealing with some of this, where the end may actually be the beginning. So here we are, the making a declaration that we have lost our identity, our shame, and our reason, which brings us to the all-pivotal part of today's fifth motif in this Losing the Culture War, and that is the decision. In the decision, the first thing I want to posit for you is that moral absolutes matter to a civilized people. If you go back throughout the history of time and you look at the wars that have been fought and the pillaging and the looting that took place, it was all because people historically may have been uncivilized to begin with in their barbaric nomadic ways of just annexing what came down their path, Or as some cultures got more civilized and allowed themselves to be seafarers, i.e. Portugal and Spain, or navigable river people, i.e. Egypt and parts of the other parts of the world, what we began to see was people wanted to advance their own belief system using the waterways as an excuse to increase trade and then eventually move. In some places, they confronted people who were less equipped and less able, and as a result, they were overtaken, conquered new lands for king and kingdom. And this is how history historically has allowed its growth to take place. But there was always some kind of a moral absolute in everybody, whether they were the victor or the victim. There was at the conscience level something, a line they would not cross. Ultimately, unless you're a cannibal in some part of a remote Ireland where, you know, there no humanity has ever reached that was from outside, and eating people was okay, I'm pretty sure even the most vile atheist in the world who believes there are no moral absolutes may have that line and say, okay, I won't eat people or I won't eat dogs. But moral absolutes matter to a civilized people. It's just that the line has so far been moved or erased that we think there is no such thing as moral absolutes anymore, and morality can be redefined as that line grows. Well, that's what we talked about in the last four episodes, and losing this culture war is that this line became fluid. This line in the sand that was the definitive taboo of our youth. Even though I partook in some wildness as a child, there were some taboos you didn't cross in terms of how mother would perceive you if you violated somebody within a shame culture, who would then not consider themselves worthy of being pure at marriage, for example. These were all traditional routes that mom would sit us down and say, I know you guys are coming of age and you think you're all that, but imagine if somebody had done this to your sister or to your mother, how would you react? What she was saying was the virtue that is part of human existence, the purity that is part of the human condition, has some lines, and these are moral absolutes that matter to a civilized people. The chastity of preservation till you are married is something that was drilled into us as children. The fact that I managed to maintain that and actually have a mate who managed to maintain that as well has held us in good stead. In fact, I was joking with her yesterday, the 16th of August. It was 40 years since I saw her in business school, and I still remember, as sure as the sun will rise, when I asked her for permission to hold her hand or any of those things, she was a reluctant participant in just about everything till that line in the sand was drawn and says, I'm going to go away to another country, and there we will wait for each other till the matrimony takes place. And at that point, if it does, I will be yours and I'll be yours for life. But if at that point my parents decide otherwise or there is some consternation or friction, I still want to walk away with the idea that I will be pure for someone else. Now, as a young teenager with the hormones raging, I don't think I have the civility and the maturity of dealing with that discussion like I am now. But I so wish that the world would have some kind of moral absolutes like that, that are lines drawn in the sand saying just because it's legal doesn't mean it's moral, just because it's available doesn't mean you partake, just because others are doing it doesn't make it okay, and just because it's paraded and heralded on television that every time a drink is offered or a cigarette is smoked, that somehow people are cooler. And these are just, I may sound like an old fuddy-duddy, but maybe the romanticism of the age is how we stop this culture war. To win it, I would encourage all of you to go back and read Sun Tzu's The Art of War and actually look at the fertile plain and the thorn-ridden plain and the obstacles and the position of vantage. And even though he was talking purely from an army point of view as to what makes good generals who have morality and understand heaven and earth and understand urgency and understand the terrain, even though he was talking about it in the conquest of those that have armies and will move those mighty armies, every one of those principles will actually hold you in good stead. If you look at the war that is being waged and how we are losing it, and if you want to be that last bastion, how do you get that vantage point? How do you evaluate between heaven and earth? How do you evaluate the goodness of man as it pertains to the goodness of society? The second component in the decision to ask yourself and everybody else around you is a God-given conscience is needed for existence. The question of is anything wrong with anything anymore is one we have played many a time on this podcast, but let's look at that God-given conscience. Within the confines of a Judeo-Christian belief, I hold on to the fact of what my Lord said, I go away, but I'll leave with you a counselor, a holy guide who will never leave you. Maybe it is the only book of moral fortitude that anybody follows within the confines of whatever they consider their holy writ, where the God of the universe says, you're not good enough to come to me, so I'm going to send my son as a sacrifice. The son as a sacrifice says, I will be the sacrifice because you're not good enough to get to the Father, but I will also be the sacrifice because you're not bad enough to be left from the Father. I will stand in the gap for you. And then when he goes away to fulfill his millennial prophecy, he says, I go away, but I leave with you a counselor who will never leave you. That holy trifecta, realizing in the beginning there was a God and that God had a son who he sent for my sacrifice, and the son saying, I go away, but as we restore this world that we have created, I had to enter it to show you that the sin of this world is real, but every sin requires a savior. And that's what a God-given conscience is. It is needed for existence. You have to believe that there is something beyond you, something above you, something around you that is not only comforting in the sense that it is a protector for you, but it is confident in the sense that it goes before you, stands behind you, is always above you, and always beneath you. A God-given conscience is needed for existence. Through many of the trials that I have gone through personally, familially, societally, culturally, emotionally, economically, occupationally, I have always realized this, that knowing that God is in my corner, invisible as he might be, having a faith that is real, blind as it is not, I have always marched on realizing that having that God-given conscience, the very first psalm says, do not do business with the ungodly, do not negotiate with fools. And every time I did that, I knew the mistake had been made, but the conscience is what allowed me to realize that I had made the mistake. Not having the conscience will allow you to go down the path just realizing you had been wrong, not even realizing you had made the mistake, and before long, you're 17 mistakes down because the conscience did not rally you. Third, truth by nature is exclusive. We are living in this vast bastion, this cauldron of imbecility, where everybody is trying to parade lies as truth. Some of the most staunch advocates of this idiocy are people who actually profess to be believers in a God and actually were raised within the confines of the Catholic Church. Now, I use Catholic Church because some of the people who arrived at the very heights of leadership within the United States tend to be people who profess their Catholicism and talk about how they were raised and understand right from wrong and good from bad. And even in the evangelical circles, of course, the Catholic Church is a little more strict in your ability to continue to participate in the elements that are offered as part of the Lord's Supper. If you have violated some of their code of ethics, the evangelical and the Protestant denominations tend to be a little more lax on some of these things, whereas each denomination is different. But the Holy Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church, talks about those components, and it's very, very adamant about the fact that if you violate those tenets, that you are can be excommunicado in some way. And yet these people at the very height, even in defiance of the very people who run their denomination, say, I am this by birth, I am this by choice, I am this because I became this, but yet I believe exact opposite, and I'm doing it because I'm a nice person. Well, one great person once said, Jesus Christ never came to earth to make bad people good. He came to earth to make dead people live. And what I mean by is spiritually dead, emotionally spent, sinfully occupied, evil participating. Truth by nature is exclusive. There has got to be a line in the sand where we say, you know, we are not going to bend this anymore to the point where it becomes a circle and our logic is imbecilic. There is a good and there is a bad, and someone has to define that. Everything cannot be a gray area, which is ironic because one of my favorite things to say is, when I look at Twitter and the verse in which the Twitter verse in which these people feud, someone like a Peggy Noonan, who wrote speeches for Ronald Reagan and talked about the great visit of Mother Teresa at the National Prayer Breakfast, has maybe a couple of 100,000 followers. And then there is another person who is just famous for being famous and has about 25 million followers, which means a person who's famous for being famous and has cosmetic lines and walks around on private jets and whose kids are named after the cosmos has more followers just because she is good looking or has created an identity for herself that is false. Whereas someone who is actually talking and articulating about the annals of time and the advent of history is relegated to the ash heap of mediocrity. That's one very simple example of our time. The flip side is also true. As you navigate through this, you'll begin to realize that the truth that we want to espouse somehow, for example, the book 50 Shades of Grey, which talks about all kinds of immorality and the participation of it just because of a bachelor and his exploits, I guess. I've never really read the book or understood the concept. But on Amazon, that book retails for $50 or $40 or whatever it was, but it was astronomical. And the complete works of G.K. Chesterton, which masterpieces like Orthodoxy, etc., was $2.99. Can you imagine 22 volumes of one of the most prolific writers of our time is about $1.99. And absolute garbage and insane voyeurism and bestiality and the extents of boundaries of bondage is retailing for about $20. Last thing, there is no such thing as a one-ended stick. Again, we've preached about this ad nauseum, and I say preached because every opinion you have, mine included, on this podcast has an opposite opinion. I don't agree with everybody, and I don't expect everybody to agree with me. But at least when I want to bring my points together, I tell you my thread. I tell you where it happened, when it happened, why it happened, how it happened, what happened, and whether I should participate in it or not. But when I'm confronted by some of the lies of the other side, I'm not told anything. I'm just called a bigot, a racist, someone who's prejudiced, and someone who doesn't understand that the world has evolved. And you can pick your gender, you can pick your identity, you can pick your fluidity, you can pick your partner, but you cannot pick your intellect, which is fascinating. And that's why I'll probably sign off with the words that I used some years ago that seem to have resonated with people in some kind of amusement, and that is, ignorance is not a medal. We should stop wearing it. It's time to make the decision. Until next time, this is your humble host, Krish Dunham. Good luck. God bless.
And that concludes another episode of The Pursuit of Purpose with Krish Dunham, brought to you by Skylife Success. Please subscribe, rate, and visit us on the web at krishdunham.com and skylifesuccess.com, where you can find our social media links and access to additional resources. Till next time, happy learning and happy living.